recorded on the 25th of July 2005.
Hello there, I'm Margaret Phelan, Kidderminster born and bred. I'm going to talk about my wartime memories. Hello. Well, my mother in 1940 began to work as assistant cook at the Borough Restaurant, which was in Prospect Lane in Kidderminster. It was also the school clinic and dental clinic. Trestle tables down a long room with a kitchen at the back. The restaurant had come into being under a government edict that councils or civic people had to provide for feeding a large number of people who moved into towns to work in the factories, the munitions factories and essential war goods. The numbers of people who were fed a midday meal varied, went up to 400 at some peak times. They paid during their war years. Mother took over as cook supervisor after she'd been there about 4 or 5 months. Dinners were ninepence, a sweet was threepence, and a cup of tea was a penny. They collected different coloured tickets from the cashier at a desk by the door as they went in. She was a Mrs. Vile. I think her son was one of the clergy in the town at the time. They sat down then at a seat along one of these trestle tables, and meals were served from the kitchen by WVS workers. The WVS volunteers were not WRVS at that time. That came very much later, I think, after the end of the war. And Miss Dorothy Finden was their organiser, very well-known figure in the town, and with an anaesthetist too. In the kitchen there were two, sometimes three, women who'd work cleaning vegetables and doing the washing up. Very few mechanical aides in those days. Then there was the assistant to Mother, and Mrs. Phil Coles, who looked after the making the sweets and puddings. There was a big steamer at one end of the kitchen. There was a small storeroom off, which housed a fridge and shelving for the dry goods, the flour, rice, etc., that was there. All food had to be fresh, with the exception of possibly corned beef. There was very little food that wasn't fresh. Dried peas were available, but not much else. So potatoes came in hundredweight sacks, vegetables came in sacks, vegetables, all seasonal foods, and flour, large quantities, which was kept in dustbins. There was always a danger of rodents, but they managed to cope. I think that yes, it was very there was nothing stylish. People were not encouraged to sit and talk. It was just a place where you went, had a good meal, and left again. But it was very popular. When Mother left, she was the restaurant closed down in 1950 when the food position got easier. She had several letters of appreciation for all the work she'd done. Hello. I was in the lower fourth at Kidderminster High School in 1939 when war broke out. We were all very apprehensive. We were all equipped with gas masks, and you were sent home if you got to school without your gas mask. You had to go and get it. We also had practice of what to do when the air raids went, and some of us had to go through a little gate in a high wall into the cellars of Hillgrove House, which was rather nice because we were given barley sugars to suck, so we didn't mind that. Fortunately for us, there weren't too many air raid warnings during the daytime. But girls were also organised to do fire watching and first aid duties. I was a junior at that time, so I wasn't involved there. We also had parties to go out on sports afternoons. Instead of playing sports, we went to nearby farms, sugar beet singling, potato picking, fruit picking. We had a fortnight's camp out at a farm at Crowell picking plums when they were in high season. That was rather fun. So we've just given an empty case to fill with straw, and that was what we slept on, eight of us in a bell tent. Great fun. We survived. Also, apart from knitting, everyone did that for the forces. We were especially linked with the French. The headmistress was very friendly with Mrs. From Fortox. Never mind the name. There was a French connection, and we were encouraged to write and adopt the Free French sailors who were coming over, great risk to themselves, to fight with General de Gaulle. And Ribsford House at Bewdley was the Free French training academy for officers. But many of us wrote to Free French sailors. I don't know what they made of our letters. It was rather funny at the time. My head was turned as a 14-year-old having a letter that began, "Ma douce fleur des anges," my sweet flower of angels. I never met him, which was probably a very good job. One other thing went on at school, and over 15s were asked to help in a great emergency, a huge consignment of small arms, small bullets, had been bored with the wrong borehole, too narrow. And we were asked if we would work 4-hour shifts on Saturdays at Tomkinson's, which had been turned over to munitions, to put these bullet sleeves one by one onto lathes to hollow them out just a little more, increase the bore. Well, we were going to get what seemed to us quite good pay. I can't remember what it was now. But your fingers were bound, fingers of your left hand, which was going to hold the lathe, were bound with sticking plaster. You picked up the bullet. I think it was a foot treadle on and off. You did have control as to whether it was working, turning or not. But you put the sleeve onto the spinning reamer, I suppose that's what it's called, and then tried it with, you had a measure to put inside the sleeve to see whether the bore was now wide enough. And you were paid according to the number you did within that period. I think we had a break after 2 hours. But it was very exciting work. I think it went on for 2 or 3 months. I can't remember any more details. One Sunday afternoon, early in the war, we were having a cup of tea at my mother's, looking out of her front window on Birmingham Road, opposite the convent. Heard a plane coming over. I said, "That's a German," my mother said very severely. "Don't be silly, Margaret. It's Sunday afternoon." But it was a German. Came into sight. We could see the black cross and the swastikas on it, and also black smoke coming from the tail. It went over the convent, and as it went over, bombs came, long black sausage-like objects dropped from it. So I imagine the pilot was just jettisoning his bombs before he crash landed. I'm a member of New Meeting Church, Kidderminster, and I do remember that our hall, which is at the side of the church, was commandeered during the war years. It was commandeered for the use of the BBC Midland Light Orchestra. Their conductor was Ray Jenkins, man with a huge mop of very grey hair. They gave concerts in the town hall. I don't know that of anyone who was ever allowed inside the hall. The windows were bricked up, and it seemed to be top secret. That's about all I know. I think it was probably about from 1940. People couldn't get away on holiday, but they still wanted some light relief, recreation. And holidays at home were suggested. I think they happened in every town and city. But in Kidderminster, both parks, St George's and Brinton Park, had events, holidays at home, every evening, sometimes on the weekends also. There'd be concert parties. A stage would be erected in St George's Park, the side of the bowling green, that very sacrosanct bowling green, lovingly looked after by the elderly French gardener, a Mr. Leloup. He was very fierce to anyone who he caught, not respecting his gardens and lawns. He lived opposite the park in Roden Avenue. But concert parties, I remember Patsy Heath's dancing class gave parties, and Arthur Howley, I think it was, and his concert party. Sometimes you'd get small bands playing. Fred Reynolds, I think, was playing at that time. His wife, Doreen, is still around in Cookley. Lives in Cookley or Wolverley. She may remember something of that. But it was great fun. Now, I got roped in through friends selling raffle tickets on St George's Park, and almost every night during that holidays at home period in August, I was selling raffle tickets on St George's Park. Who else was involved? There was Robin Cook. They lived on what's Doolittle and Dally's offices now at Proud Cross. Oh, yes. And Hugh Kelly, now deceased, and Trevor Roden. I think they were Carpet Siemco family, weren't they? Yes, so the four of us, we had great fun selling raffle tickets, see who could sell the most. And of course the money was used to fund the entertainments on the park. They had dancing too, mostly on Brinton Park, where you'd have a dance band in the on the dance band stands there, and tannoys, and great fun. We made our fun in those days. There wasn't much else.
I went, I can remember. Mm-hmm. I believe there was some music being played in the old pal's shelter next to St George's.
Yes.
Next to the bowling green.
Yes.
And I believe there was a band, a military star band, playing on the bandstand.
Could be.
Do you remember that?
Yes, yeah. There was a bandstand in St George's Park.
And there was a van parked down the little driveway with a tannoy system on.
Yes.
Little things like that stay in your mind.
They were ever so good. Well, of course, being a boy, you'd notice the more technical things, Bob. No, my son does. Hello. The government had encouraged youth clubs to help children whose parents were both working, father away in the army and mother working perhaps nights. So youth clubs open two or three times a week for children. George Street Methodist Church had a very lively youth club. It was held in a big basement underneath the church. As you went in, it was also a first aid post, I think, an air raid warden centre, because there was a huge rack in the one corner hung with yellow oilskin jackets. I remember that very clearly. Quite a lot of fire buckets around too. By that I mean buckets filled with sand, and some stirrup pumps in case of cinders dropping. It was a jolly good youth club. We thoroughly enjoyed it. A lot of children from the high school and local grammar schools. We had debates and discussions, we had some lively games and also dancing. But we had a youth club service in the church one or 2 years. I know I gave the sermon one of these services, though I wasn't a Methodist. But it was very worthwhile, very good club. I think we went about twice a week. And this was during the blackout too. But in those days, no one felt really nervous about a young girl going out into the blackout. You might bump into a lamppost and collect a few bruises, but you never felt anything nasty, unpleasant would happen that you couldn't handle. There were also youth clubs. There was government council-inspired one at Foley Park School, the junior school, in Northumberland Avenue. We met in the big room there, and also one of the smaller classrooms. so that we could split up for various pastimes or discussions, debates, meetings. This too was a most excellent club. I think its first leader was Mr. John Drake, Johnny Drake, as people referred to him, the headmaster of the grammar school. I have mentioned elsewhere, I can vividly remember, he caught me up for dancing and taught me how to quick step. When he gave up, after having set the club going on its feet, then Harry Hodgkinson, another headmaster, I think, or schoolmaster at New Meeting, he took over as youth club leader, and he too was excellent, encouraged some very good debates and discussions and classes in first aid, and very essential in those days, and gardening and other interesting things of the time. Okay.
Excellent. But then you also, you know, something that was interestingly done at Birmingham Road Methodist. They...
Oh, yes, Birmingham Road Methodist Church was at one time, quite early in the war, I believe, housing a large group of Irish labourers in their basement. I don't know how large their basement was, but the church was very large. It was next door to my mother's bungalow on Birmingham Road. I don't know much about it. Mother had to give permission for them to be fed at the borough restaurant. She was supervisor at the time, but she didn't cater for them. She was only concerned with the provision of the midday meals for the other people. But they had, some other volunteers stepped in to provide meals, breakfast and an evening meal and sandwiches, I think, for these workers. I can't remember how long they were there. It must have been several months. What conditions were like or anything like that, I don't know. But we used to get some staggering on Friday nights, pay night, and wandering round the side of our house instead of going to the to their door of the church. I know, Mum, I can hear my mother now saying, "Be off, not to come here." When Italy surrendered in, I think it was in 1944, we had Italian prisoners billeted at the shrubbery in Birmingham Road. I remember seeing them in the evenings. They worked on farms during the day or other sort of labouring work. But they were free enough in the evenings. They used to walk up to Brinton Park. I used to play tennis with friends on Brinton Park, and we'd often have a group of Italian POWs watching, cheering if somebody had made a good shot. I don't know any more about them, but they became quite a familiar sight. The other thing Bob wanted me to talk about torch batteries. These were in very short supply. If you had a small torch, it had to be shielded, as the air raid wardens were after you, and you could be fined for showing lights because people thought you might be using them to alert enemy planes overhead. So a torch battery was either covered, most of the front glass was covered with black paper and a small hole cut in the middle, or else the reflector behind the bulb was painted black. You only got a very dim light from that battery, but it was better than nothing, and most people carried a small torch with them. And of course, if the rumour got round that this shop or that shop had a stock of batteries in, long queues would form to buy fresh batteries. I'm afraid some unscrupulous dealers could collect old batteries, warm them up in the oven for a bit, which I believe would revive them temporarily.
Very temporarily.
And then sell them. There are a lot of get-rich-quick fixes like that during the war when the wide boys got going. That's what we called them, the spivs or the wise
spivs.
Boys. Yes, yes.
But so, you also knew what they did to car headlights.
Oh yes, car headlights. Mm. I remember the reflector was painted, the half the reflector was painted black. That's the lower half. And the top half of the glass was also shaded black, so that very little light came, but just probably enough for a driver going quite slowly. The light from the headlights would go down. Whether that applied to these army vehicles or not, I'm afraid I don't know. Oh, thinking of army vehicles, by 1944 I was working at the Co-op dairy. I had a bicycle. I used to bike from Birmingham Road to France Road, where the Co-op dairy was. I had a basket, a wicker basket, on the front of my bike. Plenty of American convoys were going past at that time in 1944. Must have been sometime just before the D-Day landings. And by the time I got to the dairy, my basket would be filled with chewing gum, cigarettes, chocolate, sweets. I was very popular when I arrived in.
Oh, yes. It's a lovely story.
Yes. Oh, yes, I had a great collection. And he had to wave back at the people, soldiers who threw the stuff into my basket. Yes.
And you also have a nice story about the police pulpit disappearing on VJ Day. That was
Bob. I don't remember a lot about the actual VE night, because it was rather damp and wet in Kidder. But VJ night was different. It was mild. I remember I went up to my friends in Larches Road. This is Peter's sister. And her father, who'd been head of the Home Guard, or one of the top people in the Home Guard, had got bird scarers rigged up around his trees, going off bang bang at intervals. I came away with another friend who'd been at Monica's, getting on towards midnight. It was quite safe to walk through the town then. You never felt uneasy or in danger. When we got to the Bull Ring, we saw that there was a small group, a couple of soldiers, a sailor, and I think a couple of Americans. I'm not sure how many or at all, but they were setting fire to paper, newspaper, and trying to burn the wooden pulpit that the policemen stood in that time. They weren't successful, so we backed into the recess of Atwood's windows. They had doorways and island show windows at the time, so you could retreat without being seen. We watched avidly, because they knocked the pulpit over and rolled it then like a giant rolling pin down through the Bullring into Trinity Lane, which at that time was between, I don't know how to describe it now, but it led down from the Bullring to the river. At the side of T.J. Hughes now.
Yes,
it would
still
have
there.
Been.
That's the line.
Yes, yes. Yes. But they rolled it down Trinity Lane, and we watched, a bit scared. Didn't know if we were going to be the next to be tossed in, but we made sure we weren't. And they did, although we didn't see it happen then, hoist it over the railings and dump it into the river. Ken Tomkinson's book, Kidderminster, does say that the police had removed it for fear of vandalism on VJ night. I'm afraid the police were a bit too late. It was vandalised. Although
to admit there was vandalism going on that particular night.
I'm sure that was
They were
some.
Probably just covering
yes.
it.
Yes. Yeah. So, I think that's about all.
Recorded on the 25th of July, 2005. By Margaret Phelan.